Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxy, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Bryan's!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined on this Thursday afternoon by William Walterer. And Will, when I woke up this morning, you know, I thought that with having you scheduled to appear on the show today, you helped avoid the blizzard because there was no snow on the ground when I woke up. Zero snow. But folks, now the snow has started and you're going to want to stay safe.
I can only do the temperature, Luke. I can only do the temperature. It's at least like not freezing cold out right now.
Fair enough. But folks, if you are on the roads, drive with caution. In southeastern Wisconsin, portions of the interstate are closed down today because of the weather conditions that have been building all morning and steadily continuing to snow throughout the day. So if you're commuting, be sure to add in a little extra time to your regular commutes. It's going to take you a while because road conditions are slippery, and it's good to drive with caution. But Will, really appreciate you joining me here on the show. We're doing a Wednesdays with Will on Thursday. We're checking this one off the box again. I think there's only one more day of the week that we need to hit, and we can finally have Wednesdays with Will on every day.
Which day is that? I think we've done Monday for sure. I know we've done Tuesday. Friday because that's my personal favorite. Tuesdays?
I think Tuesday because we've done Mondays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. I think Tuesday is the last one we got to check off the box and get that bingo five in a row. But we'll get there eventually. But here this today...
the Wednesdays with Will segment, it's kind of like, don't take the word Wednesday literally. It's just the name of the segment.
Yeah.
It's like the... It's like when Coca-Cola lost that lawsuit about vitamin water, right? Because they were sued for allegedly trying to market that vitamin water was healthy. And Coca-Cola came out and said like, well, we never said it was actually healthy. Just because we use the word vitamin doesn't mean it's healthy. And a federal judge was like, no. But they tried to make that argument in court. So that's the argument that Dueling Tangents is going to stick with. That we never actually said it was Wednesdays. It's just Wednesday happens to be the name of the segment.
Wednesdays with Will happens to be the segment name. Yeah. Well, we appreciate you joining us here on these airwaves across Civic Media in the state of Wisconsin, broadcasting from the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side for Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX 1580 AM. And across the state, the Shaw and Waukesha, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, News from the Center in Richland Center, Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh, Lake Air in Amory, and WGBW in Green Bay. If you want to share a tangent with us on this Thursday afternoon, 844-967-2789. Those phone lines are open. The governor of Wisconsin, Governor Tony Evers, giving his state budget address yesterday evening. We're going to get into that a little bit later in the show, as well as some updates about what the Supreme Court candidates are saying about themselves and what makes them an attractive candidate. And someone's saying the quiet part out loud again, Will, so we'll dive into that a little bit later in the big show too, but something that I've wanted to discuss for some time, and it's hard because there's a lot of news going on, and there's only 1 hour of Dueling Tangents here, and we haven't got a chance to discuss it, so going to dive deep here this segment into what's going on in East Palestine, Ohio, with the train derailments. Now, the environmental disaster and cleanup from this derailment has got a lot of focus on who's to blame, Will. Who's to blame? And so let's start with, if we could play it for the people, we've got Evan on the board. Want to thank Evan as well. But there is a clip from an account that you and I both follow, I think, pretty closely, Will. And it's More Perfect Union. It's an online presence that works to bolster organizing voices behind unionization efforts, and just a great source to follow for information around the country. And More Perfect Union has been focusing on being able to provide a little bit more insight, because Will, as you and I discussed at the end of last year when it was ongoing, the threat of a worker strike for the rail workers across the country was in all the headlines. The president of the United States and Congress intervened to prevent a national rail strike, saying that the economic burden of that strike would be far too great for the country to take. And so the problem is, when it comes to the conditions and the reasons why those union members were threatening to strike not being resolved through a strike or continued negotiations, we have the problem then that arises of why these workers were threatening to strike coming to fruition. And so More Perfect Union puts together a lot of excellent content. It gets shared far and wide, but because I think it's very well produced. And so we've got a little clip about the insight of what's going on in East Palestine, Ohio. Evan, if we could play that for the people.
Let's talk about the flaming axle that appears to have derailed the Norfolk Southern train in East Palestine, Ohio. Doorbell video shows the axle overheating and failing about 20 miles before the train derailed. But initial reports say the crew was only notified about a mechanical issue shortly before the derailment. So why did that alert take so long to reach the crew if the axle was overheating for 20 miles? We're going to follow the NTSB investigation as it unfolds. Their main job is to answer why this happened, and their first update on this was issued last night. No surprise, they suspect the overheated axle to be at fault. Rail workers have suggested that precision scheduled railroading has a lot to do with all of this. PSR is the corporate practice that's been piling up profits for the railroads lately. In short, it means cutting costs and doing more work with less people and safety resources. And it governs every system in the rail industry, including those designed to catch problems. So let's hear more from a union leader and 22-year railroad veteran.
The defect detectors have changed. They created several years back what's called a trending defect detector. Let's say defect detector number one, this car passes, it sees it heating up.
And
it sends a signal to
let's talk about the flaming axle that appears to...
The train passes the second detector, it sees the heat increase. There's another alarm sent. The train crew is not hearing any of this, though. It's kind of like an algorithm, so to speak. They're watching the car. What should be happening is the dispatch center notifying the crew to keep a check on this car. But that ain't the times we live in, because it's hurry up, get the train across the railroad, let's make the fat cats on Wall Street happy, turn a profit. And now, if that crew hits the third defect detector, that car could be way too hot and be in a catastrophic situation as this one was. Then the crew gets an alarm, and sometimes it's too late.
So when something starts going wrong, the train crew doesn't always hear about it. Dispatch does, and they tell the crew when to check it out. But PSR has put major strain on that critical system that's supposed to keep all of us safe from a disaster like this.
Everybody on the railroad, every craft, took an extreme hit with PSR. They've consolidated all these dispatchers' territories to one desk, where you might have had four or five dispatchers. Now you got one guy handling, doing the work of five people. The train dispatcher might have went from covering about 200 something miles of territory upwards to 1,000. They have all these trains on the screen they're taking care of. They could have heard this silent alarm that we don't hear on the train, and they're so busy they couldn't get to that.
Clyde is talking about an example of what the current conditions are like. We'll get answers as the NTSB investigation unfolds, but rail workers have warned us about the dangers of PSR and extreme profiteering long before this disaster happened.
And so that was John Russell, a contributor to More Perfect Union, outlining what led to the axle overheating on this train car that then led to the derailment, including the derailment of a train car that included hazardous materials, which is now leading to the environmental cleanup efforts underway in Ohio. The burning of these materials rather than the ability for them to just explode unknown. And so it is a very, I think, good insight, Will, to discuss this aspect of this story, because a lot of fingers are going to be pointed saying, well, the Biden administration's in charge right now. Well, this is Biden's fault. Or Pete Buttigieg is in charge of the Department of Transportation. This is Pete Buttigieg's fault. When really, that finger pointing abdicates where the real responsibility is when it's these rail companies that are stripping down the procedures just to try to create a profit that are leading to these unsafe conditions.
Mm-hmm. And Mike DeWine's the governor of Ohio. So at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of accurate fault to be dispensed, whether that is to Democrats who, in the case of Secretary Pete, might not have done enough, Republicans, as Trump was the one to overturn the Obama era ruling on break infrastructure, and to the wealthy corporations themselves, who are the, I will say, the single biggest culprit in this situation. Norfolk Southern, which is the railway that had the incident, is a $55 billion corporation that has a long, long history of lobbying against safety regulations. They spent years fighting against the Federal Railroad Administration's effort to upgrade the, quote, Civil War era braking system that still remains widely in use. And they have fought against stricter rules on hazardous material transport, including how you label these hazardous materials, whether or not they would be considered hazardous materials. Since 2017 alone, Norfolk Southern has cut more than 20% of their employees while initiating a $10 billion stock buyback program. I mean, the union rail workers warned us that antiquated regulation and corporate malpractice would directly lead to cataclysmic environmental results, and now we're seeing that come to fruition.
Yeah, in East Palestine, Ohio, this happens about 2 weeks ago. Just today, another derailment with a train car, including hazardous materials, happening outside of Detroit. Last week, one in Houston as well. So there's a lot of these instances. East Palestine is not an isolated incident. This is something that is going to continue to happen all around the country until we get a system in place that both protects workers, protects the environment by ensuring these regulations on how hazardous materials are transported around the country is regulated, and just being able to put forth a system that is not the Civil War era when it comes to braking mechanisms. But Republicans and the system likes to kind of back those things. We've got an 1849 abortion law that's being questioned whether or not that's what's on the books here in Wisconsin. So it seems like we can't get out of that era in more than one way. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents, joined by William Walter on this Thursday afternoon. We're going to take your tangents, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined by William Walter on this Thursday afternoon. You can share a tangent with us here on Civic Media, 844-967-2789. You can call or text. You can also tweet us your tangents at Dueling Tangents on Twitter. And we are discussing the way that the railroad industry and its corporate profiteers and it's union workers, and it's non-union workers too, all workers in the railroad industry, have pointed out kind of what could have happened. And last year, when the conversations about whether or not because it came down to the collective bargaining of these workers, saying that they deserved more. They wanted paid sick leave. And they wanted time off to be able to take because they were scheduling requirements that there were very few days off for these rail workers. And they were asking for some basic needs when it came to paid leave. And the railway industry, the corporations that run these shipping lanes and the rail companies, refused to meet them where their demands were. And the workers threatened a strike, and the economic implications of said strike were to the point where the federal government intervened and prevented these workers from collectively bargaining. These workers said the current setup of how we're doing business could lead to some pretty big disasters. And we have now seen one of those disasters unfold in East Palestine, Ohio. We have continued to see train derailments in Houston and in Detroit since this event in East Palestine. And really, it leads to, I think you put out a very good point in that last segment, Will, talking about how these lobbyists for this industry have worked to try to repeal, and during the Trump administration, effectively repealed some of the past safety measures that would have potentially avoided what happened in East Palestine and all these other derailments. And so, Will, it's like, how long can this go on until we can see some movement in the right direction when it comes to workers' rights and safety regulations in an industry as vital as the railways?
Well, first of all, why the suits are the ones making the decisions on safety regulations over the workers who are on the ground working with these with the trains, on the trains, seeing day to day how these industries operate is beyond me. But, you know, you talked about the other train derailments we've had since then. Let's not forget that in 2012, I believe it was December of 2012, so the end of 2012, there was a train derailment in New Jersey where 23,000 gallons of vinyl chloride, the same gas that was the main contributor to the East Palestine incident, was leaked from a train derailment, and nothing changed after that. So you touched on it earlier that the controlled burning aspect was kind of the best case scenario, in the sense that the building pressure was essentially a ticking time bomb. Mm-hmm. So you were either going to have this entire American community blown off the map, or you have to essentially nuke them. And unfortunately, best case scenario was that the United States government broke the Geneva Convention by committing war crimes against its own people. One of the most prominent gases released from a controlled burning of vinyl chloride is phosgen, it's known as, which was a chemical warfare used during World War I, killed over 85,000 people. That, along with mustard gas, were kind of the predecessors to the banning on chemical warfare. So this community, and frankly neighboring communities, 25, 50, 100 miles radius, are likely to be contaminated for the next, you know, 100 years at this point. Who knows? I mean, the stories that are coming out are horrifying, dystopian. Dead fish filling the streams, neighboring communities reporting dead livestock and sick and sometimes dying in people's arms, pets. A journalist that was attempting to cover it was arrested.
Arrested, yep. And
like, and what is going on?
Norfolk Southern has given a potential compensation of $25,000 to the community of East Palestine. Not $25,000 per individual. $25,000 was what the initial suggestion was from this giant corporation that listed $12 billion in profits last year. Not a $12 billion company. $12 billion in profits last year, Norfolk Southern. That's what they generated in 2022, and their initial response to this derailment, that by all indications so far, that there is an extensive review that is going under. But if the precision rail scheduling is correct, and it was one of the axles that caused this derailment that then led to these train cars filled with hazardous materials needing to be released through a controlled burn, their initial suggestion was, we'll give the community $25,000 to help the cleanup efforts.
Which in a community of 5,000 people is quite literally $5 per person.
$5 per person. So that is the corporate response to this event after the corporate lobbyists worked so hard to get the regulations, rules, and restrictions around how rail companies operate to be rolled back, and to be reduced, and to be as little as possible. Because being the party of a government the size that could be drowned in a bathtub is the goal of some politicians out there. But this is the ramification of what you have, and fingers will be pointed. People will blame Pete Buttigieg. People will blame Joe Biden. People will blame DeWine. the Republican governor of Ohio. And there's probably plenty of blame to go around. But again, one of those fingers needs to be pointed at the billion-dollar corporation that is raking in profits, and then response is, well, we'll cut you 25 grand.
We got to point out, too, Luke, that a former fire department battalion chief and 21-year hazmat technician, Sil Caggiano, where that's where I got the nuked from. His words were, we basically nuked with chemicals an entire town so we could get a railway to open.
Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. We'll continue the conversation. Take your tangents when we get back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined by William Walter on this Thursday afternoon. Folks, the roads are in blizzard conditions, so as you're traveling across especially southern Wisconsin in the southeastern region, by far the worst conditions accumulating so far into the day, just drive with caution, drive with care. As our friends over at As Goes Wisconsin said, if your windshield wipers are on, your lights should be on too. So please drive with consideration to other drivers. Give yourself a little extra time when commuting today and drive with caution. It is a Wisconsin winter out there here on February 16th. William Walter talking the train derailment that took place in East Palestine, Ohio, earlier this month, and the conditions that led to it, and where we go from here. Let's head over to the phone lines, Will. We've got Dick here in Madison calling in. Dick, what's your mind on the topic?
Well, it's on a similar topic when you see governments that don't work.
Okay.
The human suffering that's going on in Turkey right now, you know, and the wrong people are going to go to prison over it. They're not going to build something any better than the rules are, and that government, from everything you read, is just wrought with corruption. And they were just building stuff that had no business being built. And now you're approaching, what, 45,000 dead? I mean, it's every day it's just sickening to see something like this. But that train thing, you could tell the minute that happened it was going to be ugly.
Yeah, the human toll in Turkey and the environmental implications of what this derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, is going to mean. They're important stories to be keeping an eye on, and we appreciate your phone call, Dick. That when individuals say that they don't want a government because they don't want they want limited government, they want smaller government, they want to be able to take a full-time salary but wrap up their legislative duties for the year in the first week of March. These are some of the things that lead to, well, when you don't have the sufficient government resources to respond to tragedy, then they act like it's, oh, well, it's the government's fault. The government couldn't respond to it. It is very frustrating because it is one of those self-fulfilling prophecies that if you like a limited government is the solution, and then when a problem comes around that needs a robust government response, because this is the free market, folks. The rail companies being able to pay lobbyists to go and relax regulations to say, let us do whatever we want to operate our businesses. For these rail companies to be able to go and slim down the workforce to the point where these safety precautions are more and more responsibility of miles of train track being now monitored by fewer and fewer people leads to errors like this.
Corporate deregulation is the sole reason that this happened. And we have to point out, Luke, that it's not that these companies are like inherently evil, right? These aren't Disney villains or Liam Neeson in Batman Begins, where they're intentionally trying to poison communities. They're trying to make money. It gets to the heart of capitalism, and our greedy American culture puts money and corporate profits over the health and well-being of our communities. And they will do anything they can to nickel and dime, save money here, and throw more back at Wall Street. This is the perfect example of that. Corporate deregulation led to this. In theory, the government should be able to step in and not allow that in the first place. But that's why you can't have this type of, oh, small government, the free market will handle itself. I mean, we're seeing it in, I believe it's Iowa right now too, right? Where they just put forth legislation to allow 14 to 17 year olds back to work.
Yeah, that's the Republican response in Iowa is, let's get more children working and that will help the labor shortage, rather than having employers take on policies and procedures that would attract more workers to them. They're saying, well, we'll expand the labor pool by allowing 14 to 17 year olds to work. It's fascinating. One of the people that seemingly doesn't have a problem saying that he is more than welcoming in trying to recruit these private dollars in this whole process that is set up the current way. It's kind of raising a little eyebrows, but former State Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly saying, well, yeah, outside spending is flowing into the state of Wisconsin, and that is why you should vote for me as the conservative option for the Wisconsin Supreme Court primary that is right around the corner next Tuesday, February 21st, Will. And
already?
Yeah, it's here. It is upon us. And so Dan Kelly saying the quiet part out loud, does this shock you at all, Will? Or do you what are your thoughts on Dan Kelly saying, yeah, I'm the one that can attract the most outside conservative dark money dollars. That's why you should vote for me. Is that kind of weird?
Like, this is like the fourth time we've said that in the last 3 weeks, Dan Kelly saying the quiet part out loud. That might as well be his campaign slogan at this point.
Dan Kelly saying the quiet part out loud.
I will say it out loud.
Well, this is the headline over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Big special interest money is flowing into Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Dan Kelly says that's good for him. That's an interesting campaign tactic to take, Will, when just a few days ago, he was criticizing his fellow candidates in this race for saying, well, they're not projecting enough. How can we know if Judge Jennifer Doro is a true conservative? She doesn't actually say where she'll vote on these things, and then goes and says, well, you can't vote for Janet Protasiewicz.
But also, right, Everett and Janet are bad candidates because they've told us how they're going to vote.
Exactly. And so he's just hypocritical in that regard. And now
it's
just
Republican doublespeak, Luke. We've talked about it before.
Tap
right?
The sign
rules
for us.
Rules for thee, not for me.
There you go.
Do I need to tap the sign? Exactly.
But this is just a fascinating fascinating little story over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and the piece written up by Corinne Hess. While politicians, particularly those running for judicial office, typically shy away from talk of super PACs and outside interest groups, Kelly told Price County GOP caucus that he is in the best position to bring in outside money. A statement that a lawyer specializing in campaign finance said should raise eyebrows. Yeah, that is eyebrow raising. And it absolutely needs to be talked about.
My eyebrows raised, that's for sure.
Again, saying the quiet part out loud. But this is just fascinating, Will, because I feel like not too long ago, the judicial races here in Wisconsin were still seen kind of as a nonpartisan thing. And in the last decade or two, this is really vamped up to be just the worst inside joke in Wisconsin politics, because how partisan these nonpartisan races actually get. And so do you think this is going to be he seems to be pulling out all of the stops before next Tuesday's primary. If I had to take a gauge on it, I would assume that the Kelly campaign is a little worried that they're not going to come in first or second. And so he's pulling out all the stops by saying, yeah, you spend that outside money on me. I'll be the best one to get it. I'm the candidate because of that reason.
Well, we have to note, too, the JS Online article mentions Kelly personally raised $100,000 from Jan 1 to Jan 6th. He spent $174,000 and has $201,000 in the bank. But that does put him behind Jennifer Doro, who raised $365,000. And Kelly's largest individual donation, surprise, surprise, $20,000 from Kim Hendricks. If that name sounds familiar, that is, in fact, the daughter of Diane Hendricks. Kelly has also received $1.79 million from Fair Courts America, which is, of course, Richard Uihlein's
super PAC. Yeah. So he's he has not shied away from the super PAC funding. I think an interesting dynamic that needs to be in play here as well is the outside spending is really the track that conservatives are using for this election, because no better indicator than what the state parties reportedly raised for this first 5 to 6 weeks of the year, Will, because the Wisconsin Democratic Party of Wisconsin raised around in the ballpark of $3 million. And any guess on how much the state GOP party raised over that same period?
I saw this data, so I don't want to like sit here and act like, well, I'm thinking maybe in the X amount of range, and then like play it off like I'm some kind of like.
No, you apparently already know. I don't have the number specifically in front of me, but it's like 56K, right?
I believe it was 56K, yeah.
Okay, so $56,000
raised. Shade over 50 grand.
Compared to the $3 million raised by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. So if that gives you any indication that conservative groups, candidates, organizations, everybody in this race knows that the conservative money is going to be spent through outside spending. It is not going to be the state party that is the avenue.
Which is why the state party doesn't invest time and resources in raising money. And that's actually where I saw this data from, and I would assume you did too, from a couple of Republican operatives on Twitter who were complaining about the WIS GOP. Why don't we put in the same work that the Dems do? They've raised all this money and we've only raised this amount. Well,
no, I believe I saw mine from J.R. Ross. I don't follow those whiners on Twitter. I try to limit my.
Neither do I, Luke, but we know how Elon's algorithm works, right? It's to draw engagement. And if you've commented something in the past saying like, hey, you're wrong and here's why, now Elon thinks you're interested in that.
Yeah, he's just trying to push as much of that in front of you as he possibly can. And yeah, I believe J.R. Ross.
Don't even get me started on the Eagles tweet.
Come on, you're not deleting your tweets after not getting as much engagement as, say, me? You don't get upset and you're just like, oh, I'm going to delete it and then tell the engineers to change the algorithm so that for a while there, I don't know if it was the same case for you, but every single time I refreshed my feed earlier this week, Elon Musk tweet, whatever it was, a Elon Musk tweet was at the top of my timeline because...
And it was multiple. It was like Elon, right down the line.
And I ignored all of them. I didn't engage in any of them because, you know, just because he can throw a hissy fit and get the engineers to change the algorithm to try to boost his own online presence on a platform that he spent $46 billion to own. Yeah, I feel like I'll just ignore him. So I just
I don't compare right my impressions to you, Luke. I shoot for the stars. I also compare my impressions to the president of the United States.
Look at you. You got some optimistic goals.
The leader of the
there.
Free world. And if I don't get more people seeing me than him, I'm going to delete my tweet on the team that was leading. I think he tweeted that close to halftime. So the Eagles were up like 10 at that point, of course, because he has to take what he sees as the safe bet.
And ended up losing it anyways.
He's Drake, essentially. Like, anytime he jumps in and supports a team, that's like a curse.
See, Drake's Raptors still beat the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals, back in 2019.
I don't recall.
So I have a hard time with that Drake curse because the Bucks were still on the raw end of that one. Speaking of the Bucks, going to be taking on the Bulls tonight down in Chicago on an 11-game winning streak. Heading into the All-Star break after this evening. I think tonight's the last game before the All-Star break. So Milwaukee, one of the hottest team in the league, in my opinion, for the NBA. And hopefully, you know, Giannis and the guys. I think Chris Middleton's out for this game tonight. But hopefully we can get a win against the Bulls, continue that win streak, and go into the All-Star break with the longest active streak in the NBA. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined by William Walter on this Thursday afternoon. If you want to share a tangent with us, 844-967-2789. We're also going to get into a couple of the takeaways from Governor Tony Evers' budget address last night given at the state capitol. One of the things in there, Will, that I really want to discuss is the paid leave proposal, because relates back to what we were talking about with why rail workers were looking to strike at the end of last year. And I think it ties some of these things together. If there's an aspect from the budget address that you want to talk about as well, feel free to give us a call, send us a text, tweet us at Dueling Tangents, or that number to call is 844-967-2789. We're going to continue the conversation with one segment left in the day. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to learn more about what we're up to here at Civic Media, head on over to the website, civicmedia.us. You can see all the stations, all the programs. You can sign up for updates to learn where the next Civic Media station may be popping up in your neck of the woods. Civicmedia.us. That's the website. One more segment left in the day. Plenty of time for your tangents. We'll be right back. Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined on this Thursday afternoon by William Walter. Will, the budget address. It seems like we're delaying this one because we're two kids that did not do the homework assignment, but I got somebody's notes. Does that count?
I wasn't even going to mention that aspect of it, but...
Come on, I think we can own up to that. We're old enough to say that, teacher, we did not do the homework assignment.
It's not my fault either. I was doing other Medicare for All related work last night.
Yeah, so. It's not like you have an excused absence. I don't really have a good reason. Honestly, it wasn't broadcast across the Civic Media Network, so I didn't get a chance to tune in. So we'll have to change that in going forward, but I did do a little, you know, passing of the notes, got some reporting done on it by the Journal Sentinel. They kind of they send their political reporters to handle all those things, so we can from time to time not focus on them but talk about them after the fact still because of their excellent reporting. So Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, 7 takeaways from the Evers budget address written up by Molly Beck and Corinne Hess at the Journal Sentinel. The biggest one, and both in my opinion, and the number one that both Corinne and Molly write up over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Evers seeks paid family leave and a higher minimum wage. I think it's a no-brainer. I think that those are great policies, Will, that would attract more people to Wisconsin.
But how many snowbirds are going to come for that, Luke? Because that's the real question.
Stop talking about the damn snowbirds. I don't care about the snowbirds, Robin Voss and William Walter. Come on.
I got Robin Voss fever, and the only cure is spending money on the state.
He's like, my name's Robin, and snowbirds are birds. Robin is a bird. I'm going to use the snowbird.
You beat me to that joke. I was as soon as you said Robin, I was like, wait a minute. Maybe he's the snowbird, and he's just like projecting this on everybody else.
I've alleged before that maybe he's thinking about getting close to retirement and is trying to just make a case for why he should claim Wisconsin as his primary residence if he was to retire to a warmer state for slightly less than half of the days out of the year. But the interesting dynamic for this is, okay, so Will, Republican proposal of a flat tax. It's the only semblance of an idea that we've gotten so far. Majority leader of the state Senate, Devin LeMahieu, has gotten behind it, saying that that is what Republicans would like to see. Compared to this, that the Evers administration wants to give a 10% tax cut to anybody that makes less than $100,000, or if you file jointly, $150,000. So let's say a young family of four, a working couple, both have jobs, they file jointly, making around $125,000, $150,000 between the two of them, and they live in a different state. Mm-hmm. And the state of Wisconsin is trying to attract them to our state to help address the workforce shortage that we will have at the end of this decade of 130,000 workers. Do you think that a nominal tax difference from 5% to 3.5%, or whatever the, I don't know the specifics, this is a hypothetical scenario, I'm not trying to do too much math on the radio, but do you think a change in the tax code like that is going to be more attractive to a young working family with two children than a state that has paid family leave or not? a state that has a higher minimum wage or not. There
I mean, paid family leave in and of itself, Luke, is incredibly, incredibly popular. A YouGov poll in 2021 found 82% of Americans believe employees should be able to take paid maternity leave. Like, come on.
Yeah.
68% believe paid maternity and paternity leave should be offered. And it was like 64% of conservatives, like 95% of Democrats. Like, this is a winning issue. The majority of Wisconsinites support this.
The majority of those polled in those polls that you just provided, yes, we all agree in it. But the Republicans immediately jumped yesterday to saying that this is a liberal wish list by Governor Tony Evers and pretty much trying to stop it all before and say it's all dead on arrival before the budget session gets underway. And so it's very disheartening to see and hear. But let's head over to the phone lines. Let's hear what your takes are on last night's budget address. We got Sauk City Bob calling in. Sauk City Bob, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi guys. Hey, earlier in your show, you were talking about the Supreme Court race.
Mm-hmm.
And I got kind of a rhetorical question for you.
Okay, but, maybe I'll have a rhetorical answer, you might not need it.
Yeah, well, what I'd like to know is, has the candidate who has the son who's a drug dealer, has she withdrawn from the race yet? I'll go ahead and hang up.
Appreciate the call, Sauk City Bob. There is a story going around about one of the sons of a Supreme Court candidate. I will not say drug dealer because there is an investigation going on by the UW-Milwaukee police. The university police there are still investigating that incident. But no, that candidate has not dropped out. But we appreciate your call, Bob. You can be like Bob.
Make sure to check out the Daniel Bice article on it if you're interested.
If you want to learn more.
Learning more.
We got Steven in Green Bay calling in now. Steven, what's on your mind on this Thursday afternoon? We got about 2 minutes before the end of the show, Steven.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I just wanted to say I really did like Tony Evers' address last night. Republicans want to make it political and personal, like they always do. I think it's funny that our state, the Republicans for years have been moving the state backward. And honestly, knowing what I know about the state, if I was moving here from a different state, I would probably not move here just because that if, you know, my wife would want an abortion, can't happen here. And there's a whole other list of stuff that they're making the state really unattractive. And it's sad, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Steven, from where we're sitting right now, if say somebody from the Southwest or the South or the Northeast wanted to move to the Midwest and they were weighing their options between Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, or Iowa, I think Wisconsin and Iowa kind of stand out as the outliers there. If you are looking for a place in the Midwest to move, to have the freedoms that you've been guaranteed from, say, California, Colorado, the other states in the union that have not had the attack on abortion that we currently have here in Wisconsin right now, you'd have a hard time picking Wisconsin. Minnesota and Michigan and Illinois are doing a lot of things to try to attract more people to them. And unfortunately, it seems like Wisconsin Republicans think that tax cuts are going to be the solution that addresses all of the state's problems rather than actually investing a historic $7 billion surplus into addressing those problems. Will, really appreciate you joining me on this Thursday afternoon.
I got to give a shout out, Adopt Don't Shop, to my sweet boy Albert.
There you go.
Who wanted to be on the show today, but unfortunately passed away this morning.
So our thoughts are with you, Will. Adopt Don't Shop. This has been Dueling Tangents. We'll see you all tomorrow at 2. Talk to you then.